I'm not pulling out of my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work at Home Edition. So today, I have Neil LaPlante Johnson, who is the creative lead for Lorwyn Eclipsed, to talk all about the world building and creative of Lorwyn Eclipsed. Hello, Neil.
Hey, this is Neil. Hey, Mark. Glad to be here. Yeah, as Mark said, I'm the creative lead of Lorwyn Eclipsed, and I couldn't be happier with the set and how fans are receiving it. So, great stuff.
So the interesting, we're going to start at a little different place today, because I actually I play a big role in the very early part of the story, and then we'll hand off to you, in which I play a very small role, is I've been trying to get us to do Lorwyn for years. And the pitch that I sort of came with was I knew that we didn't have space to do two different sets. And because we had done a lot of worlds that were similar to Lorwyn and Shadowmoor individually, I felt really, really important that you needed to see both of them, because a lot of what to me defines Lorwyn is Shadowmoor. And so I pitched the idea of they start melding together, that the world is part Lorwyn and part Shadowmoor. And so that is the pitch that I made for years, and it wasn't until Kamigawa did well that we put Lorwyn on some thing we asked the public, and it scored really well on that, and that finally got us to do it. So I do know when you guys started that the one given was it's Lorwyn plus Shadowmoor. That was the one starting off point. So
yeah, correct.
What did you guys do with that?
So basically, we had to kind of conceive of what the world would be if it was just like both of these things mixed. I think the interesting tension of the original Lorwyn and Shadowmoor box was, you know, when it became night, essentially, you switched to your Shadowmoor form, and when it became day, you switched to your Lorwyn form, and that would happen, you know, but you could only be one or the other, and you didn't really know about, unless you were one of the main characters from, you know, the narrative or Una, you didn't really know that that was happening, and so we thought that that proposal sounded really interesting from, like, an ideological or maybe, like, an identity kind of issue, so it's like, well, what if you knew that there was, like, a shadow self out there? Or like a reflection that, you know, you could see in the mirror, but you couldn't really interact with. And so we tested a bunch of prompts and premises about, you know, what if they blended together and then them blending together poisoned the world or did all these weird things. But I think fans were kind of like, I just want to see these two worlds collide and just kind of be able to re-experience them. Because for a lot of players, the only way they experienced the original blocks was, you know, through kind of osmosis, through a commander, or someone told them about how awesome it was back in the day. And since Magic has grown so much since the original block, Lorwyn block debuted, we just wanted to make sure that players could, you know, step into this world and kind of rediscover why players have been, you know, so enthusiastic about it recently. So yeah, we just took that and we said, like, yeah, that's the right thing. Let's just do it as pure as possible. Throw in a little, you know, Easter eggs, like these eclipsed realms for, like, longtime fans. But in the end, we were like, let's just play it straight.
So what does that entail? I mean, like, I know when we return to a world that one of the things you guys have to do is sort of like, well, what are the good parts that we want to save? And what are the parts we're like, we probably could do something better than that?
Yeah, I think it came down to the most important element of the Lorwyn Shadowmoor blocks, at least from our perspective when we were developing, and I think probably mechanically this is the same, were creature types. We wanted to make sure that the main creature types that everybody kind of associated with Lorwyn Shadowmoor kind of showed up again. That was the big picture here. And so we kind of built from there, like in a very technical sense, we said, like, okay, well, we know we have elves and flamekin and kithkin and goblins and merfolk. We know we have those. So what is the best way to kind of preserve that identity? And then we kind of trimmed the fat in terms of things that were really interesting. Like some of the things that I really liked about original Shadowmoor block in particular were like the demigods and things. And we kind of said, well, if we had to get one thing right, it wasn't that. It was the creatures and the awesome, you know, Marrow doing weird things to Boggarts and stuff like that. Like that was the core of it. So you kind of work from there and you see how much set can you fill up with just that, and then you kind of make a kind of tiered list to say, like, okay, well, let's make sure we include, like, a, you know, a Gilderbairn reference, or let's make sure that we, you know, have at least like one urchin or like, you know, another oof, just stuff like that. So you kind of build piecemeal and say, what do players expect when we say we're going back to Lore and Shadowmoor? That's, you know, typal. These are the creature types. And then you kind of add things to it and make this kind of, you know, impromptu stew kind of world building decisions.
Okay, let's walk through the main creature types. I'm just going to go in Wooburg order here. So we'll start with Kithkin. What are the challenges of Kithkin, making Kithkin?
So Kithkin were one of the creature types that I think a lot of players, when they first saw them, thought they weren't particularly appealing. They have this kind of uncanny valley look to them. And, you know, they're not, you know, if you were to rank magic creatures on cool and evocative and, you know, you get things like elves or you know, something like that. But Kithkin, the challenge there was a lot of players have this sort of perception that they're not very cool. So our goal was to, like, really emphasize what makes them important, the Stotweft, the ideas of community. And we knew from, like, a set like Bloomborough that players aren't allergic to the idea of community and coming together and working together as, like, a inspirational message and kind of a through line for a faction. So we just really leaned in. We made sure that the Kithkin, at least in Lorwyn, were super communal and friendly and open. And then we could take their Shadowmoor selves and make them, you know, isolationists and xenophobic, turn those dials up a lot, and made sure that everybody knew exactly what they were about. So they were fun. The challenge was kind of making sure that they looked a little bit cooler than the original set, and also giving them some fun, like, mounts and stuff so they could ride big chickens and other things like that.
Okay, next up, let's talk Merfolk.
Yeah, Merfolk are super interesting because, to me, they had a lot, like, maybe the least developed sort of personality. They kind of just did trade, and that was the kind of vibe that I got the original set. I didn't find them super, you know, inspiring the first time around. So we wanted to kind of take that to its extreme again and say, like, well, if they're doing trade, who do they trade with that's very friendly? Who do they have, like, good relationships with? Who do they have, like, these kind of weird relationships with? And, you know, what does trade mean in a post-Phyrexian invasion world that's trying to rebuild? Like, how important can merfolk be to a world that's trying to build connections again? And also, a world that is now kind of split in two, that, you know, you have these, you know, lore and merfolk don't want to venture into Shadowmoor waters or things like that. And so trade becomes way more important. Communication and messaging, and their ability to traverse the world in ways that other folks can't, to try to make sure that that was really apparent and emphasized.
Okay, and what is the Shadowmoor merfolk versus the Lorwyn merfolk?
So the Shadowmoor merfolk still care about trade, but they're going to either swindle you or do something nasty to get their end of the, you know, get the better end of the deal. And so basically, while the Lorwyn merfolk might be these kind of fair trade, you know, open trade, mercantile folks, you can liken the Shadowmoor merfolk at their best to be kind of swindlers, and at their worst, pirates, you know, and there's no big giant bodies of water on the, you know, the plain of Lorwyn Shadowmoor, but, you know, they may be sailing down the river and kind of, you know, raid a boggart hovel. I don't know what they'd find in a boggart hovel, but, you know, they might do that, or, you know, raid a safe hold run by the elves of Shadowmoor and try and, you know, pick treasures out of that. And so, yeah, they're kind of like the dark reflection. It's mercantilism, but taken to the kind of, like, naughty and kind of evil extreme.
Okay, next up is the goblins, which I don't know if people remember, but they were base black in Lorwyn, not base red.
Yeah, so the goblins, they're called boggarts in Lorwyn Shadowmoor. The cool thing that we want to do for them is goblins on every single magic player are different, right? They have different appearances. They all have the kind of same energy, right? They're kind of chaos demon kind of, you know, they'll break things and you know, fight and stuff like that. But the Lorwyn ones have this kind of, like, village witch, this kind of, you know, like, they're trying to brew potions, and you don't know the kind of result of what's going to happen on Lorwyn, but overall, they're kind of benign, if kind of, like, prankstery. They might do stuff that's gross, but they might not harm you either. And on Shadowmoor, they kind of embody this role of, you know, like, pure chaos and consumption. Well, the Lorwyn goblins and boggarts are trying to find new experiences through, you know, discovering new things and having fun and brewing weird potions. The Shadowmoor Boggarts goblins are trying to find new experiences through kind of violence and pain and this kind of mix of pleasure and all these kind of weird tropes, to the point that they like to fight so much that they'll nail, you know, iron to their skin as armor. And it's like this weird mix of pleasure, pain, and all this kind of stuff. So they're cool. They're fun. They're probably the most fun to write concepts and to, you know, do art briefs for, because you can kind of make them do anything and look like it's kind of all canon.
Okay. Next up is the Flamekin, the Elementals.
Yeah, so the Flamekin are, in the original block, Flamekin were just pure red aligned, or they're all fire, red fire Flamekin. And then when you went to Shadowmoor, they were cinders. Here we have this idea for a kind of mechanical solve. Design came to us and said, hey, we want blue red Flamekin. And so we said, okay, well, we're going to have to make up this blue Flamekin. What's a cool new piece of world building that we can add? And so the Flamekin are all about this idea of self-discovery. And so red Flamekin, we can see, are, you know, self-discovery in the sense of, you know, they're looking for outside, you know, inspiration. They're, you know, climbing mountains, or they're communing with their, you know, giant elemental, brethren. Whereas these blue Flamekin that we've introduced, Rhymekin, are kind of introspective kind of self-discovery. They kind of look inward and say, you know, who am I? What am I about? And so we thought it was a cool kind of parallel. The difference between the Lorwyn and Shadowmoor ones are the Lorwyn Flamekin and Rhymekin, I think, are about community on some level. They're always about trying to reach out and kind of expand their knowledge base. In Shadowmoor, originally there were cinders who were kind of destructive and kind of, you know, nihilistic destroyers. But now we've kind of seen that they're just sort of more isolationist, that they're more about kind of self-discovery in exclusion to the rest of the world. You'll see that a lot in Shadowmoor, is the idea that Lorwyn is about openness and connecting things, and Shadowmoor is far more about, like, keeping to yourself.
Okay, that brings us to elves.
Yeah, elves are, you know, a perennial favorite for, I think, most Magic players. And the Lorwyn elves, we kind of kept the same. They originally were kind of the rulers of the plane. They had, you know, their entire domain was the plane. They kind of ruled ruthlessly with an iron fist. And they were kind of these eugenicists. They would cull and kill all these different species that they didn't think they were beautiful enough. And that's a central kind of conceit of all the elves on Lorwyn and Shadowmoor, is they value beauty. Lorwyn elves value beauty through, you know, expanding their empire and kind of culling what they deem is imperfect. They used to call them, or at least publicly used to call them, eye blights if you weren't pretty enough. After the Phyrexian invasion, we kind of said, well, it's kind of hard to maintain an empire after you've been, you know, basically fought to the brink by, you know, interplanar foe, and then Shadowmoor kind of cuts off all of your trade routes and, you know, a lot of the infrastructure that you might have had. And so while they're weaker, they're still kind of vying for the, you know, the return of their empire. And on the Shadowmoor side, they also value beauty, but what they value is kind of preserving beauty rather than destroying what isn't beautiful. So you'll see them collecting, you know, beautiful flowers or tending to groves and, you know, trying to make sense of the chaos of Lorwyn Shadowmoor, or Shadowmoor in that case.
Yeah, one of the things we purposely did last time is that the elves were the ones that, when you change from Lorwyn to Shadowmoor, like, the some of the darker elements of them were on the Lorwyn side, which was a little different from how most of the world worked.
Yeah, I think it's definitely felt really inspired and kept the setting feeling fresh. I think it's a big reason why Lorwyn and Shadowmoor kind of live in a lot of players' heads. It's very kind of subversive fantasy. On the other hand, it does make it a little tricky because they do violate, you know, all the times we want to do mechanics that feel kind of like mean or whatever. We have to, you know, think like, well, that goes on the Lorwyn elves, but the Shadowmoor of everything else. So an interesting problem. It's, you know, works out to be usually totally fine in the card set. But it definitely adds some spice to the whole, the setting in a way that a lot of other Magic settings, one, don't explicitly have, you know, super evil elves all the time, but also don't have the contrast of when you go to the dark side, the evil people actually flip allegiances, sort of, you know, to put it kind of rotely.
Okay, so I talked about the five main creature types, but there are three more because Lorwyn had eight creature types. The five premier ones we focused on a little bit more. They each have their own archetype, for example. But there are three more, so let's talk through the other three. So we'll start with the fairies.
Yeah, you know, fairies are a fan favorite, and they've tormented many a, you know, gameplay table. And we knew that players really wanted fairies to, you know, show up in some capacity, which is one of the reasons why, you know, in working with the design lead of the set, Michael Majors, making sure that the kind of the chase card, the card that everybody's going to want to play and put in their decks, is that Bitterbloom Bearer is a fairy and a reference to, you know, a super iconic card from the original blocks. That kind of made sense. And we tried to put as many fairies as we could. The fairies, in summary, are all about kind of pranks and whimsy. And for a long time, fairies really didn't change, like in the original blocks, much between Lorwyn and Shadowmoor. With the downfall of Una, who was, you know, the matron and mother of all fairies, now they change a little bit more, but they're kind of the least changed even still. So in original Lorwyn, what you'll notice is they're kind of more the traditional fairy. They're insectoid, but you can see kind of faces. And on Shadowmoor, they have these bug carapaces and whatnot. But outside of the visual changes, you can just imagine the Shadowmoor ones is a little bit more cruel, but they're still pulling pranks. They're still, you know, siphoning dreams. They're still doing all the same things. And maybe the next time we come back, we'll see them have changed even more, you know, as the downfall of Una gets further and further away. Maybe we'll see them kind of adapt to their new homes in unique and interesting ways.
Yeah, when we made the original Lorwyn, we thought it was cool. We liked the idea that there was one group that went from being kind of meaner to nicer, which was the elves. And we thought it was cool that there was one group that didn't change that much. And the fairies were who we picked to be the ones that really didn't change. They, for example, every other creature type changes color in Shadowmoor, except for the fairies. The fairies don't change color.
Yep.
Okay, so let's move on to the tree folk.
Yeah, tree folk, there's one of the most iconic magic creatures, at least from my perspective, Doran, emerged from the original Lorwyn block. And tree folk, I think, are a fan favorite. I think people just love the idea of these sentient trees, you know, walloping people. And they really lean into like a unique, usually a unique mechanical direction where it's, you know, toughness matters. And so we didn't really change a lot. We just kind of said, you know, on Lorwyn, the trees are sentient, they're wizened, they're, you know, aged, and they're mentors. But if you cross them, obviously, they can get, you know, pretty prickly. But on Shadowmoor, the tree folk kind of lose a lot of that sapience. You know, they're not really able to kind of reason. And you can think of them kind of as savage defenders of the forest in that case. So that's the kind of, you know, direction we went. And we knew we had to bring back Doran. I'll just give a huge shout out to, Doran. And we saw his Lorwyn side last time. And I knew that I wanted to show his Shadowmoor side. And hopefully break a couple of players' hearts and make them, you know, a little sad, but, you know, in the fun way.
Okay, and the final of the eight is Giants.
Yep, Giants kind of echo the same kind of direction we had for Tree Folk, where in Lorwyn, they are, you know, they can still fight, you know, they can still, you know, be aggressive, but oftentimes they're more just curious and they're well-traveled and they're very smart. But they just don't really like to interact with smaller folk. And, you know, that's always fun. It's a cool trope space. And their whole thing and all the Giants' whole thing is the idea that they will go into deep sleeps. And Lorwyn, we call them kind of name sleeps and other kinds of sleeps where they kind of dream up, you know, fantastical things. And there's a lot of different lore there. And, you know, it's hard to keep track of, to be honest. And in Shadowmoor, they also become a little more savage. They lose a little bit of that sapience. And their sleeps turn to these massively long hibernations where you can see, you know, boulders and roots and trees kind of grow out of them because they've slept for so long they become basically immobile and kind of bound to the earth. And then when they finally awaken and pull themselves up, you know, they're covered in the land itself. So that was cool.
Okay, so there actually is a secret ninth group. So I'm going to talk a little bit about their history, and then we'll explain what you guys did to update them. So when we were working on original Lorwyn, we ran into this problem that the creature types get very siloed, that you need you want players fighting over cards when you're drafting. It just makes for a better draft. And so we needed what we, at the time, I referred to as glue. Typal Glue. And so we came up with the idea of Changeling, which was based on Mistform Ultimus, was a legendary creature I had made many years before that players really liked. And so the idea was, let's just make this new thing that are every creature type, and so any deck would want them. And when we originally pitched the idea, Brader Donovan, who was the head of the creative team at the time, he had no problem with shapeshifters, but he didn't want what he referred to as traditional shapeshifters, where they just look like the thing they're supposed to be, meaning he thought it affected the story too much. If any creature could secretly be something else, it's hard to tell the story. So he really wanted them, changelings, to have a very distinctive look that you just knew they were a changeling visually. And they ended up coming up with what a lot of players referred to as the jello mold look of an original Lorwyn. They were a green, and they sort of see-through. So what did you guys do to update changelings?
I think it was purely a kind of visual direction change. So the original changelings were oftentimes kind of unsettling at best. There were some cute ones, I think, from the original blocks, or the original Lorwyn block, but they weren't really fun to look at. And so we kind of took the approach to just update their direction visually. And one of our, you know, principal concept artists, Jehan Chu, basically in a day came up with this new direction for changelings, you know, keeping these big eyes, but also the idea that they're not really good at disguising themselves. So to, you know, Brady's point, I didn't really even know that, you could always kind of tell that a changeling was a changeling. They just sort of resemble their form. So they might resemble a bird, or they might resemble a tree. But really, it was just trying to update them to feel a little bit more toyetic and cute, to kind of capture the idea that these are playful and fun and exciting, rather than kind of creepy and gross, because there's a lot of creepy and gross in the original, you know, Lorwyn and Shadowmoor blocks, and not so much like fun and whimsy sometimes, or not as much as modern audiences have an appetite for, at least I'll say that. So making sure they looked fun, they were cute, that, you know, if you held them, they also still feel like jelly, but they look like they could be like a cute friend rather than like a weird creep.
So another interesting thing that happened in the original block is, so Eventide, Shadowmoor was ally colors, and we shifted the creatures so they all ended up in ally color combinations, or most of them did. But then when we get to Eventide, their enemy color combinations, they couldn't really use all the same creatures, especially on the hybrid stuff. So the creative team had to come up with a whole bunch of new creature types. So Eventide introduced a lot of extra creature types. So I know you guys wanted to, you know, cameo them or have them show up a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about getting the Noggles and Oofs and stuff like that in?
Yeah, I think the difficulty is that in a single Magic set, I think there's just not enough room for everything. Even on a baseline Magic set that we're developing today, there's always more ideas that can ever make it into a file, both from design, both from creative. But we wanted to make sure that a couple of them had some nods. And so wherever we could, you know, I'd ask, you know, our design team and say like, hey, you know, carve out space for at least one Noggle, or, you know, if you can have, you know, an Oof reference. And I talked about Gilderbairn, and I think the one we have now is Glisterbairn or something similar. And just trying to carve out intentional references for players. And I know we didn't get to all of them. I know we don't have any hags in the set, and we didn't do a mimics that were the kind of, you know, Shadowmoor form of changelings. We didn't even get to those. But trying to make sure that we had some semblance of, you know, references and homages that players could at least say, like, oh, they didn't forget about these. Noggles were a big one that people internally were like, I really want Noggles. And I was like, great. I don't think we can have a lot, but we can at least have one or two. And hopefully everyone's satisfied with that.
Yeah, another thing that I talked about this, I think, in my preview article, one of my articles, is how in the original set, there was a thing that steals goats, and I really wanted a goat in original Lorwyn, and we just couldn't fit in a goat. So I was so excited you guys got a goat in. That made me very happy.
I think that's one of my favorite designs of the entire, maybe the entire set. The commander design off-nabbed goat. It's kind of like a full circle joke, and it was nice to get Goatnap in. You know, originally when I started playing Magic, I didn't really get why you'd be stealing goats, and it took me maybe like 2 years to realize, oh wait, changelings are goats.
Yes.
And so I thought it was like a fun, clever thing. And coming back to it, I think a lot of players remember just how absurd that card seemed, and us kind of, you know, paying off, you know, 15 plus years of that card existing. So it was fun.
Yeah, the funny thing was at the time, I wanted there to be one goat. So people go, you made goat nap for one goat? And they're like, no, there needs to be no goats. And we had a big argument at the time. So I eventually did make goat tokens in like Eventide, so that just to say there are goats in the world. Goat nappers are actually napping something. There are goats in the world. So.
Right, they have a profession, you know, they're employed.
Okay, so we talked for all the different creatures. In the little time we have left, do you want to talk a little bit about just environment, about how I'm really interested in sort of how you differentiated Lorwyn from Shadowmoor and how you tackled when Lorwyn meets Shadowmoor?
Yeah, so I think we're kind of, you know, when you think about the worlds, you brought up a great point that Lorwyn and Shadowmoor don't really exist without each other. And I think even naturally, just in the course of developing the original blocks, the contrast of this kind of day and night really ended up being the kind of, you know, still, it's still the golden ticket. That's the way that we pitched it internally is, you know, this is the return to the plane of light and shadow, you know, and day and night. And so really it was kind of cranking up the kind of elements to 11, you know, making sure that Lorwyn is bright and whimsical and fun. And I think it was just that in the original. We made more changes to Shadowmoor in that we used a lot of kind of like thick brambles and underlighting things. So, you know, bioluminescent light that comes from the ground or, you know, ancient magics that are kind of underneath characters that gives off a kind of sinister look when you look at someone. It's sort of like when you hold a flashlight under your chin, you know, you're telling a scary story. And there's a lot of characters that will look like that and kind of feel sinister just from the lighting. And so that's how we saw the differences between those. And when we thought about merging them and, you know, what would happen if they came together, we wanted to feel like you could recognize elements of both. So there's brightness and there's underlighting, and the creatures would, you know, carry features from both forms. Like they might have the horns from one type of elves, but, you know, have the kind of facial structure of another type of elf from, you know, Shadowmoor or whatever. But the big thing is trying to make sure that even though you could recognize it, it felt kind of bizarre and alien. Like it shouldn't be, it doesn't feel right. We wanted people to feel like these people and these places were really out of place in Lorwyn Shadowmoor, that they kind of represented a almost existential threat or dread. So that when you entered them, for an example, when you enter them, if you stay too long, you will become what's called a calciform creature. So you'll become, you know, basically turn yourself to stone because your mind is trying to reconcile Lorwyn and Shadowmoor memories and both of these selves coming together. And so it kind of represents this kind of false promise of merging the planes in a way that's really unsettling because, you know, in truth, the fun part about Lorwyn Shadowmoor is not figuring out what happens when, you know, Lorwyn and Shadowmoor don't exist and the third thing happens. It's mostly about the light and the dark. So we wanted to make sure this wasn't a, you know, oh, we're going to fix everything by merging them together. It was like, oh, no, this is also dangerous. This isn't the solution you're looking for.
You know, one of my favorite things, there's a metaphor that you guys came up with that I really liked. You want to talk a little bit about how the metaphor of the marble cake came to be?
So I think it was really hard to explain how this world looked before we had a lot of concept art and kind of visuals for the set. And when you're in meetings with, you know, executives and you're trying to explain like, well, here's our premise of, you know, we're smashing Lorwyn and Shadowmoor together. And everyone's like, okay, so it's like one half of the plane is Lorwyn, one half Shadowmoor, and there's like a dividing line or, you know, how does it work? And we just thought that wasn't nearly as interesting. So we were thinking, well, we want them to kind of mix together so you could have these pockets of Lorwyn and pockets of Shadowmoor. And it still felt like we were just having like little circles of darkness in the light. And that's not really what we were thinking. And so I don't know who came up with it, if it was myself or art director Deborah, or if it was just sort of an errant comment. But it just like when you think about marble cakes, you think about these two colors that they don't turn gray, right? They don't blend. They keep their own kind of identity. And that was really cool. I can't even tell you who came up with it, but as soon as somebody did, We can start using that to explain it to people who, you know, who just maybe heard about the set or kind of like, you know, trying to figure out how to market it or other things like that. And they're like, oh, I get that. That makes sense. And it was also great to give to artists and be like, this, like, look at a marble cake and you'll figure out what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, the other cool thing about it, just that people understand, is the marbling keeps moving. It is not as if any one spot on the map is always Lorwyn or always Shadowmoor. And that's one of the really intriguing things, is that you, the individual, you will shift between your Lorwyn and Shadowmoor side depending on where things are, how the geography changes.
Yeah, I think it's a nice, like, existential threat to a lot of these folks, because really the most interesting parts for a lot of folks when it comes to Lorwyn Shadowmoor that are hard to communicate in a card game like Magic are these kind of moments of intellectual kind of weirdness. Magic can be a very tactile game, right? Like, there's a lot of physicality, creatures are fighting, you know, or casting, you know, lightning bolts and whatnot. But I think at its core, a lot of folks are really intrigued by the idea of this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of nature. And so the idea that one day you could wake up and you weren't yourself, or you'd kind of notice that the darkness is inching closer in your Kithkin village. And so maybe you have to pack up and move. And what does that mean for folks? And it's added so much narrative tension that authors or, you know, future world building folks and designers can play with, which I think is the best part of doing this job, is setting up, you know, future folks to do even cooler work.
Well, the set is doing really well, so I have high hopes. One day we'll get a return and see more. So, any final thoughts on just any final little tidbits you had a chance to talk about that you really enjoyed about Lorwyn Shadowmoor?
You know, if anybody is looking at the Alchemy release for Lorwyn Eclipsed, there is a piece of art that I fell in love with. It's called Providence of Night. By the amazing Justin Gerard. So I just wanted to give that a shout out because, you know, it's not often that a piece of art, you know, in the 11th hour, you know, after I'm basically kind of done with the set and I'm working on Alchemy, becomes my absolute favorite piece of art. And so I hope people, you know, pay attention to that. Alchemy releases a ton of awesome pieces. There's actually a goat napper, the grand goat napper in there for folks. And it's just a hoot and a riot, and I loved working on it. And just a huge thanks to everyone who's, you know, been having fun and playing the set and, you know, enjoying our return. And I agree. I hope there's more returns in the future, Mark.
Well, I hope there is. But anyway, I am now at my desk. So I want to thank you for joining us for this podcast.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mark. This is amazing.
But as I'm at my desk, we all know that means the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.